Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, where is the oldest functioning Jewish community in the Western Hemisphere? Kulanu means all of us in Hebrew. The organization was founded in 1994 to support isolated, emerging, and returning Jewish communities around the world. Through different activities, they raise awareness and support to assist these groups with their desire to learn more about Judaism and connect with Jews beyond their community. Bonita Sussman is a volunteer with Kulanu and serves as its vice president. She's a graduate of Yeshiva University's Stern College, has a master's degree in religion from Columbia University, a second master's in Jewish education from the Jewish Theological Seminary, and is an ordained rabbi through Aleph. For Kulanu, Bonita serves as liaison for newly emerging, returning, and isolated Jewish communities around the globe. She's traveled widely to Asia, Africa, and Latin America visiting these communities.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Bonita. The word Kulanu means all of us in Hebrew. Could you tell us when the organization was founded and by whom and why?
Sure. First, thank you for inviting me to speak about Kulanu. Kulanu was founded 25 years ago by a group of concerned doctors, primarily in the Washington, D.C. area in the United States, to work with Ethiopian issues and other emerging communities in Africa. One of the major founders lives in Israel, and some of the other ones still live in Washington, D.C. They were being pressed by Ethiopian issues. Nobody was really dealing with them. And they began to discuss ways to help the Ethiopian community.
What were some of the other early communities?
The big community that Kulanu helped develop over time is the Abiudaya community in Uganda. There's about 1,500 people in 17 villages. And this Abiudaya community is celebrating its 100th year in practicing Judaism. They had been approached by missionaries 100 years ago, and they said, no, what the Bible says is really Old Testament stuff. The Old Testament tells us what we're supposed to do, and we just want to follow Hebrew scriptures. And they began to practice on their own what they understood from just reading the Torah. And in the 1990s, they had approached Kulanu and others to convert, and there were conversions done by a Beit Din. And now there are hundreds, there's over 1,000 people in the community. And just recently, 41 students went on Birthright.
Wow.
Other big thing that happened in Uganda is that their leader, Rabbi Gershom, went to the Conservative Rabbinical School in Los Angeles. And he became, the first ordained African rabbi to go back to Africa and lead a community. In the last 3 years, elected to the parliament, and he's the first Jew in the Ugandan parliament.
So in other words, this community sort of discovered Judaism and started practicing it by themselves.
Yes.
Wow. That's interesting.
Well, most of the communities that Kulanu deals with are in that category, except they're much newer. This one is 100 years old and founded on their own. There are other communities that found Judaism on the internet. And I always say what the translation of the Christian Bible did for Christianity, the internet did for Judaism. Because, say, 100 years ago, and you wanted to know something about Judaism, and you lived in Africa, or you lived in India, or you lived in a remote village in Latin America, where would you find out about Judaism? If there was a library, maybe there'd be some books. I mean, they didn't have Jewish bookstores. They didn't have access at all to Jewish information. They didn't have access to rabbis, to other Jewish communities. And with the advent of the internet, you just Google Judaism. You can Google any mitzvah, and you will find lots of information about it. And many communities now turn to the internet for their information.
But if these people were not originally Jewish, what attracted them at all to Judaism? Where did they even get the idea from?
Okay, so there's a lot of things. In Africa, many groups feel that Christianity was imposed upon them.
Which it was.
Yeah. And so now that they're independent, they feel they're free to choose their own religion. And in Madagascar, they openly stated that the last piece of their freedom, of their expression of freedom, was to form this Jewish community, which shows they were totally free.
Wow.
Okay. And there were over 120 conversions done in Madagascar, and it's a really wonderful Jewish community there now.
So are these Orthodox conversions? Because an Orthodox conversion is not that easy.
Well, Kulanu looks for Orthodox credentials, Orthodox ordained rabbis that want to do this. Now, a lot of Orthodox rabbis don't want to put their name on this or don't want to be public about the fact that they do this. But we do get Orthodox rabbis. They are Orthodox conversions. Every male has to be circumcised before they undergo Hatafat Damrit, the drawing of the blood. There's always mikvah, there's always study, and there's always a personal interview with the three rabbis on a Beit Din.
So were these communities coming from Christianity, which had been forced upon them, or were they coming from animism, or were they coming from Islam? Where were they coming from?
It depends which community you're talking about. The community in Madagascar, while they were coming from Christian roots and sometimes Messianic Christian roots, the generalized Malagasy people feel they are descendants of Israelites. And the testimony to their belief is that circumcision is very prevalent. You're really an outcast in Madagascar if you're not circumcised male. There are different groups that did not eat pork, and they feel that there are similarities between the Hebrew language and the Malagasy language, and there's a whole study comparing the two languages together. So while for generations they're Christians, they have local faiths and everything, sometimes there's syncretism between the two, actually the group that converted to Judaism are really very heavily practicing. And for years they didn't eat any meat. We actually helped send some people to train them in shechita, so they now have some tu'udah that they can eat chickens. But that's very recent.
According to your website, the mission of the organization is supporting isolated, emerging, and returning Jewish communities around the globe. So some of the communities that you work with are isolated communities that are Jewish communities already, yeah. I assume.
Yeah.
And that have probably been Jewish communities for a very, very, very long time, but they're just isolated. Is that correct?
Okay, so two of the communities that I can name off the top of my head, one is the community in Suriname, which was founded close to 400 years ago. And it is the oldest community in the whole side of this world. It actually helped found Sherith Israel in New York City, which is the first Jewish community in New York. It was founded by sugar plantation owners, where sugar was the prime resource in the olden days that that people wanted, and it was a big, huge business. And the Jews set up the sugar plantations in Suriname, and there's a remnant community there now. It calls itself liberal, and it maintains its own identity. And what's interesting, about 2 years ago, they set up a memorial for the Holocaust for the 105 Surinamese that died during the Shoah. The second community I talk about, which I personally visited a bunch of times, is in Nicaragua. They had a community started in the early 1900s by European refugees. There is a handful of descendants that run the old community there. There are two Jewish cemeteries which they oversee. And we did some conversions down there. And I don't say the conversion, the Beit Din that we bring are really not Kulanu Beit Din. Kulanu helps gather them together, but they're independent rabbis who believe that we need to make more Jewish communities around the world. And they often call their converts their children. So we brought a Beit Din several times down to Nicaragua, and they converted people who were like marginal to the established Jewish community there. They couldn't get aliyot and to the Torah, and they couldn't get they couldn't be counted to a minyan, but their primary identity was always Jewish. The biological Jewish father married local women. So the first Beit Din that went down to Nicaragua about 5 years ago converted people from that kind of family descendancy. And now they have a minyan and everything, and they meet more frequently. Then we did two other trips to do more conversions, and there's two new groups. One calls themselves a Sephardi group, and they pray Spanish-Portuguese tradition. And the other is a Chabad group that identifies with Chabad, which is kind of interesting. I mean, it kind of blew us away that they took on kind of a Hasidic flavor. So that's Nicaragua, but its base was an old isolated group.
How do you find these isolated communities, or do they contact you?
They contact us. It's a big thing. The internet, like I say, the internet opened the world of Judaism all over the planet. And people were really looking to engage any kind of Jewish thing. And mostly the established Jewish world did not respond to their inquiries. Like, they would send it to major Jewish organizations or emails to independent rabbis, and people were not responding to them. But when they reached Kulanu, we say, okay, what do you need? How can we help? We do investigate to see if they're sincere or not. They're really pre-Jews in most cases. So the Jewish world doesn't know how to handle them yet. Like, what do we do with these people? They're not used to seeing people clamoring to become part of Judaism. We're used to seeing people run away and melt into oblivion, you know? So Kulanu serves the purpose of holding hands, encouraging, giving information. We've given out Sifrei Torah to a bunch of communities. We send teachers. We get them. We try to get them to study in Israel or in other programs. The visa problem is very big.
Do these isolated Jewish communities have any problems with the surrounding communities that they live in, like anti-Semitism or some kind of legal restrictions or any kind of difficulty practicing Judaism?
I would say it depends. It depends where and what. Some of the groups are not significant in number, so they kind of blend in. Often members are rejected by their families and friends, because those that say, okay, we don't want to do anything on Shabbat. Mm. And the custom of that country or that community is to bury people on Shabbat, so they don't attend their grandparents' funeral, or they don't attend some important family thing, or they won't eat park at a family gathering. And so there's friction. Some communities in Africa view Judaism as sort of witchcrafty and black magic-y. And so they're afraid for their relatives to join a cult. So that's kind of the story. Mostly, we're not encountering open anti-Semitism like we're used to in the West, but I can't say it never happens. It's more rare.
Has Kulano faced any special problems either working with these isolated Jewish communities or with any local or national governments of the countries where they are? I mean, Kulano going in and working with these communities?
I can't say never, but in general, we just deal with the leadership of the communities and sometimes members. There usually isn't government involvement. Once in a while, we have a school that we set up in Uganda that does, I believe, have some government involvement in the school. Sometimes there's issues about getting water into a community, and I know governments are involved, and I think we've had some contact around that. But in general, the government is not, in the countries that we're dealing with, there's a sort of a freedom of religion attitude. Sometimes there's a lot, I'll tell you what, there is a lot. There's a lot of missionary work being done in these communities, and there's often pull from missionaries pull Jews away from these fledgling communities.
You mean Christian missionary?
Christian missionaries, Muslim missionaries. Uh-huh. You know, Kulanu, we're a small organization. We're run by volunteers. And we have a $400,000 a year budget. And the missionary movements have a lot more money. And they can provide health care. And they can provide other assorted needs in Africa or Asia or Latin America that we don't have the resources to do. So there's a pull on communities that are known to be Jewish by other missionary groups.
That sort of was my next question. So most of the people who work with Kulano are volunteers.
They're all volunteers. We have a 20-something hour a week, like administrative person. We're just hiring another one for about 15 hours a week, and we have a bookkeeper. But everybody else is volunteer.
How are you funded?
We do fundraising activities. When there's a special project, we put that on the website. We do lots of nice fundraising activities. We have websites. We have gatherings. We have people who donate who really believe in developing Jewish communities around the world. Like I always say, after the Holocaust and the destruction of the Jewish communities in the Middle East and North Africa, we need more Jews. We need more Jewish communities. And there are lots of people who believe that. The next question people usually ask is, do they want to make Aliyah? Okay. And
that didn't even occur to me, but okay.
What? That didn't even occur to you.
No, but okay.
Okay. Sometimes they do, but mostly they don't. Mostly they're very happy to stay with their family and their jobs and whatever else they have in the communities that they're developing. What's sort of interesting and new in Kulanu is that originally the groups that Kulanu dealt with were very, very poor. But now we have very middle class and some upper class communities that have found Judaism. And I mean, they don't have problem with travel. They've been to Israel. They've been to Europe. They live in big houses sometimes. And so we have a range between people living in huts to people living in villas who are interested in becoming Jewish.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Well, my personal dream is that the mainstream Jewish community begin to embrace them. It shouldn't be just the work of volunteers who put time and their hearts into developing Jewish communities around the world. It should be the big, major, worldwide Jewish institutions doing this, because we're sometimes dealing with millions of people that have the potential and their heart to do it, but don't have the capability or the know-how. Some of the tribes in Africa call themselves Jews, even though they're practicing, say, a Christianity or an Islam type of thing, but their cultural identity is Jewish, and they want to learn Hebrew, and they feel extreme affinity towards Israel. But we don't have the establishment Jewish community worldwide running to help them.
Well, let's hope that people who listen to this program will contact you and see what can be done. Thank you very, very much, Bonita.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSefarad.com. See you next week.